Michael Cody started life as a punk kid from Flint, Michigan, slinging design files for brands. But today, he's pioneering a totally new genre of pizza, Howdy's Texas Grilled Pizzas. He's doing things with pizza you've never even considered possible. He wants you to eat better pizza. They're going to be huge, but you knew them way back when, because you heard them first on the Brand Manual.
Michael, we wanted to say thanks for being here today. We appreciate your time. We honor that you got a lot of things going on. And we're just excited to learn all about you, all about Howdy's and Flippin' Group and everything that you got your hands in. And you know, quite honestly, I'm excited to learn from you because I know that you have a lot of experience and a lot of things that I'm interested in. So I'm always all ears when you're talking.
Well, it's frankly, you know, I've had your pizza, so I'm primarily interested in the pizza. So I think all that.
I think that's a fair shout. So, you know, I mean, from this side, it's hard to make enemies with good pizza. So that's what we discovered.
Well, cool. Well, why don't you kick us off and just kind of give us a brief intro to everything?
Yeah, well, I started my career in branding actually when I was 19 years old. I graduated from high school and I had hair down to my backside and I was interested in doing something with my creative art skills and background, and I didn't really have much talent in anything else. So being a freelance commercial designer and getting work that way, and I had a really complex marketing strategy when I started out, which is, this will date me, but I went out and grabbed a phone book because I couldn't afford to buy a map. And in the front of the phone book, they had these little maps. So I tore one out of a phone book. And then I figured out from the Yellow Page listings where all of the print shops and ad agencies and little design shops were. And I put together a little pitch and I offered to do their first project for free just to try me out. And I just wanted to do their overflow work. So whenever they got too busy, send me your stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so that was my really complicated shoe leather marketing strategy when I got started, and picked up about 10, 15 places that would send me work and kept me busy enough. And then I made all the classic mistakes you make when you start your first business as a young person. You know, I had a bunch of buddies. I hired my beer buddies to be my team members, and they made terrible team members. And I had to fire them, and then I lost my beer buddies. So it was just kind of it didn't work out well.
Man.
You know, the whole idea though was I was just trying to learn, you know, and I came from a very blue collar area at that time. I grew up outside the Flint, Michigan area, which has obviously been known for a lot of problems. And so I didn't know anybody who was entrepreneurial. I didn't know anybody who knew anybody who was entrepreneurial. Everybody either worked for General Motors or worked for a company that serviced General Motors in some way or another.
Wow.
So I just didn't have a lot of role models. And so, you know, I spent a lot of time at the bookstore or library, just trying to read and consume everything I could find to try and figure my way forward through this thing called making a living and happening to do it in the creative marketing branding space. Now I wasn't sophisticated enough at that time to think of it as marketing branding. I was, you know, a graphic designer, but quickly I kind of got exposed to all that. And then in 1996, I had a print shop that I worked with in Flint that they called me up and they were across the street from one of the GM division's headquarters, and some executive had come across the street and asked them to make a web page. And so they looked at him and said, well, we don't really do that, but we think we know a guy who might do that. And so they called me up and they said, hey, do you make web pages? And I said, yeah, I sure do.
Of course.
I'd never made one in my life at that point. But they said, do you want this project? Because we don't really want to do this and it's not really our thing. And I said, yeah, I'll take it. And so what I did is I wrote on right down to Barnes & Noble, the bookstore, and bought myself a book on HTML programming for dummies, because that's what I was at that point. But I took it on and that kind of led me down the whole web world. And we built a web design agency and we focused on doing a lot of back-end web application development. Ultimately, that company grew to about $16 million a year in sales. So long story, how did I get to pizza? I got into marketing, branding, digital marketing space, and along the way, really enjoyed growing companies, and I ended up moving into business coaching and working with a lot of emerging small, mid-sized companies and helping them grow their sales, marketing, operations, things like that. And in the process, started a company with a friend of mine that we teach the business of business coaching, which I know is very meta as you think about it, but we actually teach business coaches how to set up successful business coaching practices and firms and grow them. And in the process, somebody I was working with said, hey, I want to niche into, and because we teach in that program what we call there's riches in the niches, which is obviously a mispronunciation of the word niche, but you know, there's riches in the niches is what we say. And we say, you know, hey, being a generalist and it's very hard to make a case compelling from a marketing perspective that I do anything for anybody. That's just not a marketing pitch. Mm-hmm. And that's not a sellable value proposition that people understand because they just can't put their heads around that you somehow are an expert in all things. Right. And so we really pushed them that way. Well, a guy came to me and said, hey, I want to focus on pizzerias, you know, the working with pizza restaurant owners. And I thought, okay. I started doing some research on that industry, and this is, gosh, 12 years ago or more. And I got all the industry trade rags, and I'm learning about the insides of the industry. I'm like, this is a really darn good business. I mean, like, I'm really getting into it. I worked in a pizzeria when I was like 16 for a couple months. So that was my entire exposure to pizza right. at that point. I was more interested in dating the girls that worked there than I wasn't really making the pizza. So I probably wasn't a very good student the process at that point. But I went in there and just started really tearing into this. And my wife thought it was crazy because I'm getting all these magazines to the house and stuff. I'm just going, I want to be clear. You are not leaving to go start slinging pizzas. Just so we're clear. You're going right. to stay with what you're doing for a living right now. Right. But I just kept getting just kind of, it was like a tickle in the back of my brain. And I just said, you know, it's a $47 billion industry in the US. It's $91 billion globally. And then as a marketer and a brand person, you know, one of my favorite books, it's classic, The 21 Immutable Laws of Marketing. And in that, it says, if you can't be number one or number two in a marketplace, you got to invent a new marketplace. You just got to create a pivot. And so as I looked at it, I thought, man, it's a really commoditized industry with a lot of deeply entrenched, very powerful competitors, but it's prone for disruption because it's been stagnant for about 25 years. There hasn't been anything really innovative that's happened in that industry in a very long time. Wood fire pizzas, coal fire pizzas, California pizza was a trend for a while.
Yeah.
And so as we looked at it, I just said, you know, there's got to be a disruptive opportunity here. Where is it? I don't know. But there's, you know, and so I began kind of got my radar set looking for it. And about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, I was reading an infographic and it showed like the 47 styles of recognized pizza in the United States, true regional styles of pizza. And I went over this infographic and I got to the bottom and there was nothing for Texas. And I thought, no, that's not possible. I mean, how in the world? I mean, Texas is like eighth largest economy in the world, some of the best known food traditions in the world. And nobody in all this time has ever sat down and said, this is what Texas style pizza is. And I thought, you know, I'm going to go do a deep dive. So we did the deep dive research and true enough, there was not anything out there that was a definitive recognized style. And we thought that's too good.
Does that indicate that the chains and specific regional players had kind of filled up the space in a way that, do you think that nothing was just able to emerge in that process? Or do you see examples of things that started to move and then they just kind of failed, or what's the history there?
Yeah, great question. So one of the areas that we looked into was the representation of independents versus chain pizzerias
right.
on a state-by-state basis. And so when we looked at it, Texas is one of a few states that's actually oversampled in chain pizzerias mm-hmm. and has a far lower population of independent pizzerias. Mm-hmm. So when you look at the restaurant makeup here, there aren't as many successful independent pizzerias
right,
in Texas.
Right.
And there's a lot more your Papa John's and Little Caesars and
yeah.
and you know, all the big names, Domino's, Pizza Hut. Pizza Hut has 967 locations, I think, in the state of Texas.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, it's crazy when you look at it on a population count that this is a great state for chains. But again, the independents have never really done a good job necessarily making their way here in Texas. So with that, and so part of
that's a cool insight. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you looked at it, you go, okay. So again, disruptive opportunity. There's a category that's wide open. In the food world and restaurants, Texas has proven to be a fairly successful and exportable concept. You know, the Laredo steakhouses and the Lone Star steakhouses and all the different things that have kind of all kind of spurned out of either authentically being in Texas or at least hijacking the concept of Texas right. for their idea. It's like Arizona tea is made up in New York or someplace like that. Right. You know, I've always thought that was hilarious, you know.
it's like the cartoon of Texas is
right.
Yeah.
The yeah. big text version that everyone right. likes to stamp on things. No, but as far as authentically being something homegrown here that has the sort of authenticity of a Whataburger or something like that, that's really mm-hmm. got its roots here. There's nobody who's done that. And mm-hmm. so we thought, okay, well, here's an opportunity. You know, this is a category. And now that we've defined that there's a category, we actually have to say, well, what is it? Mm-hmm. You know, what is it? It's enough right. to go, okay, here's an idea, Texas pizza, but that what is Texas pizza? Nobody's defined it. And right. so as we started to look around, I looked at the trend in gourmet food of grilling pizzas, which is usually only done kind of at the high-end shishi restaurants, and it's usually right. an individual portion. No one has ever turned a out and created a chain based on grilled pizza as the primary platform. And we thought, well, as a flavor profile, it's something that's extremely Texas. You know, I mean, that's like sure. the barbecue is like, you know,
you can feel the fire.
Yeah, boots, hat, and barbecue. I mean, how does it get more online, you know, or in line with that concept? And so then we had to go through a whole bunch of testing process. We spent about a year and a half testing out the product and getting it where we felt like it really represented. The other thing we felt that it really needed to launch with is a really strong Central Texas barbecue theme to the pizzas and what we do. And so we really originally we partnered with Kreitz when they were here in College Station. They ended up leaving this market, and so we ended up taking over that process ourselves. We brought in a pit master. We do all of our own barbecue now, and which is yeah. great, because actually it improved our profit and performance by bringing that in house. It's our highest cost ingredient, obviously. Right. Anybody who's ever bought Central Texas barbecue understands that's not a cheap proposition. So when it's done right, and so
yeah.
So we got the commercial industrial smokers. I mean, we can do 44, 13-pound briskets at a time. You know, I mean, we got the capacity, you know. Wow. And the recipe we're using is about a 119-year-old recipe that we've slightly modified for the flavor profiles we're looking for. But it's real. I mean, the process we're using is the authentic process. And so that's been a really fun and rewarding thing, because one of the things that we've done in our brand proposition is to make sure that what we're bringing is that what we consider the best expression of Texas on a pizza that we can possibly think to represent. We're trying to look at and represent all of Texas too. And so it's kind of a take to what I would consider modern Texas. We're not trying to just do bell buckles and big hats. You know, I mean, it's trying to represent who we are today as a people, both in food and culinary wise, you know, the flavor profiles, the things that we're bringing out, bringing in our Tex-Mex culture components, bringing in Central Texas barbecue, these kind of things. And so those have all been key to getting us where we are. We put together a partner group that's just really passionately behind the concept of what we're building and where we're heading as an organization. And that's been key. But I think really at the core of what it is it all starts from our, what we consider our core business, which is loving people.
Yeah. Mm.
We love people, you know, we just do. And we think serving people is not a demeaning thing. It's actually a great honor. Because when we look at what people do work hard all day long, and when they take their families out to eat, or when they're going to spend money, which is their hard earned life that they've worked, they've given away time, which they can never get back, to get some money, that they deserve to get something that's worth paying for. They deserve right. to get something, an experience. And I mean, the whole experience, you know, is something that delivers a good exchange of value. And so that's been a key part of what we've been doing.
How fun is it on a personal level to really be pioneering something? You're creating this whole category of Texas pizza. Like, it's beyond just, I wanted to develop a brand. I wanted to add value to people's lives. It's like, nope, you get to decide in some real sense. You're deciding this is what's going to be the archetypal Texas pizza experience. That's a pretty, I don't know how gratifying that is to you. That sounds really cool.
You know, it's awesome. I mean, it's a hoot. You know, I mean, we get to go out there and we don't have anybody to compare ourselves to. So we have to write some of these rules ourselves and say, you know, look around
you're teaching and educating and helping bring the customer along through that process.
Yeah. you know, we're getting ready to launch some of our September LTOs, and so limited time offers. And so we're bringing out one pizza I'm really excited about, and it's called the Boss Hog. And so the Boss Hog is that not Hazard, Texas, you know, but the Boss Hog is a pork carnita pizza, you know, and it, we were making it an interactive dining experience because it comes with fresh lemon wedges on top. And so then you get to squeeze the fresh lemon on the pizza before you eat it. And so we're just, nobody's given us rules. So we're making things up right now. You know, we get to do what we want because nobody's done Texas pizza yet.
That's right. So
10 years from now, I'll be like, well, this is the official way you do it.
That's right. Because we did it that way.
That's right. You know, so that's fun. I enjoy that. You know, this for me has been kind of what I would call a convergence experience, because a lot of different threads of my life throughout the last almost 30 years are starting to play out now in one place.
Yeah. You know,
where I was raised for a period by a single mom. She taught me how to cook. She taught me how to do laundry. She taught me how to iron. She told me before I got married, she said, listen, in this world, you're not guaranteed you're going to marry a woman who actually knows how to cook. So I'm going to make sure you do know how to cook. So thankfully I did marry one who actually is really good, but you know, I came in with a full set of skills, you know, and I really appreciate that because I have a passion for things culinary. I've done a lot of travel around the world. So, you know, I think Anthony Bourdain would be my spirit animal. Now, I mean, I that would be, if I could have any other job, it would be, you know, just when he was alive, carrying.
Put a camera on me and let's go.
Yeah, I'll just follow him wherever he's going and eat whatever he's eating, and that we'll have a good time, you know. So, so when I came back to doing this, it's like bringing that passion in. It's bringing the branding side of, I just love communicating messages that really connect and move people. You know, I think that's the risk in branding today is there's so much homogenization, and there's just so many yawner messages being put out there into the market that it's just kind of all white noise.
That's a technical term.
Yes, right. The yawner, you know, and it's, you know, I was having this conversation the other day with Tim from High Octane, and we were talking about that. I said, you know, it's the average, hi, we're John and John and Sons, and we've been in business for 190,000 years, and we care about quality because we're good people. So doesn't that give you a compelling reason to want to come see us? You know, just who cares, blah, 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 1-800. You know, right. it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't connect, because who's going to get on there and say, we don't care about quality? Who's going to get on there and do any of those kind of things? So to stand out, it's to really blast through, the simplicity of the message has to be so tight. It has to be so refined. So it's been a really great exercise over the last year and a half to kind of pull that, the movie Inception. We've kind of played that as our theme of saying, no, the message is still too complicated. Make it simpler. Like, it's just got to hit for people to get it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's what's helped us to kind of drive it down. But to your point of the question of it, enjoying it, yeah, dude, I'm happier than a pig in slop when it comes to what we're doing here.
You can tell, yeah.
Because it's fun. We refer to ourselves as a get-to company. There's nothing we have to do in this company. We get to do everything we do here every day.
Right.
We get to serve people. We get to put really cool pizza out that people have never heard of. I mean, we're still seeing it 6 months in, as much as 50% of our daily traffic is new people. You know, who've never tried us before. So it's just, I love sitting off on the little sides and seeing people kind of stare at the menu all wide-eyed, like, oh my gosh, what am I about to do? You know, and then they get over, and it hits the table and their eyes get as big as the plate, and then they start eating it, and they start looking at each other and talking about it and all that energy. And it's like, yes, score. That's exactly what I want to see happen. You know, that's because if I can get an emotional reaction, if I can get them to engage, then I've got them, you know, because how many times do they eat pizza and they go, well, I think I put something in my mouth and it resembled food, but it was not memorable. It wasn't an experience.
Right.
And unfortunately, that's a lot of what's marketed to us today is stuff that makes big promises and then just really fails to deliver in any meaningful way.
So I'm going to jump in. I want to ask you about this resurgence of Texas, right?
Yeah.
So I've seen this in people trying to figure out what is Texas beer, what is Texas soda, what is Texas, like, everybody knows Texas and barbecue and Texas tacos. We get that. Right. But like, there's so much more that people are exploring in.
Yeah.
What's your idea of Texas? I mean, what do you think that is?
Yeah, I mean, for somebody who's been all over the world and met people from everywhere, What feels unique? What feels different about this location?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I had an experience when we had just moved here, and I think we'd only been here 2 or 3 days in state. And a friend of ours who lives here in College Station, and she's a life, I mean, she's born here, multi-five generation Texan.
She's a lifer. Yeah.
She's a lifer, you know, a legit lifer. Her family even has a road here in town named after them. So, yeah. You know, they've been here a long time. Yeah. And she just squealed with delight when she saw us, and she said, "Well, you're Texans now." And just gave us a great big hug.
You know? That's right. Yeah. Just
immediate acceptance. Immediate, you're here, you're us,
yeah.
You're part of it. There's no waiting period. I mean, the old joke back in the Northeast is, you know, a guy moved to the Northeast when he was 1 year old, lived there till he was 99, he died. One person came to the funeral and said, "Yeah, nice guy, but too bad he wasn't from the Northeast." You know, so that sense of you belong here.
Yeah.
And I don't care who you are, where you come from, what your traditions are, any of the rest of it. If you can get in with the vibe here, I think you'll find it's one of the best places to live from just a pure community sense.
We do extremely welcoming.
We make fast friends.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what Texas means, right? That's the origin is friend. And so I remember I had a friend of mine actually who came over and visited from England, and he said, I just have never encountered people so willing to bring you over to like your table, buy you drinks, get into conversations with you, find out your story. That is a distinctive thing about us. And it's great that it's happening over tables, right? That's a fun combination.
Well, and that's exactly one of the reasons we built the interior for Howdy's the way we did is, you know, there's been this hyper customization, hyper personalization trend for the last 10 years in pizza. So the kind of whole fast casual, the mods, the blazes, the pie fives, the pieologies, all the rest of these. And you end up with all these people with their own little pizza, staring down at it, eating their own little pizza. Mm-hmm. And it like totally loses the point of pizza, in our opinion. It's the reaching into the box, reaching out of the tray. Yeah. It's the fighting for the last slice. It's all those dynamics, the conversations that happen around it. It was, for me, growing up, pizza was a very communal experience. We went to the local Italian pizzeria, you know, and, you know, all the placemats had the map of Italy on there and all these kind of things. But it was just, it was very communal. It was very much a family food. I mean, Italian families are known for their connectedness. And so we really love that about the nature of Texas as well. And that's why we even use the name we did. A lot of people assume it's because we're here in College Station that we used. It's not. It's actually because of we thought about the quintessential representation of hospitality. That is the attitude and spirit of Texas, in our opinion, is the greeting. It's not just a hello. It's not just a hi. It's just this kind of full-bellied howdy. You know, I mean, it's just like, it's warm and it's like a hug. You know, and so it's meant to be practically disarming. Yes. You know, it removes the defensiveness that people have. You know, and I grew up in Flint where, you know, there's a lot of people get shot on a regular basis, you know. So you are defensive when you're interacting with people walking up and down the street. If somebody just approached you on the street in Flint, you're ready to kind of square off because there's no real practical reason they should be doing that. But here in Texas, it could happen anytime. Any stranger could start a conversation with you at any point.
That's right.
It's genuine, you know. Sure. I mean, we'll be sitting in the restaurant.
It's hard to use the word howdy and be pretentious.
Right.
you just can't be. That's one of the most charming, disarming, inviting ways to start any conversation.
Yeah. That's why we refer to our food as approachable gourmet.
That's right.
We're doing high-end gourmet-style pizzas with very chefy influence to them. But we're delivering it in a package that you can wear your flip-flops and sandals and t-shirts.
Accessible, yeah.
It's just, you can be totally accessible and comfortable. There's really no pretense required. And Frankie, you'd stand out like a sore thumb if you were pretentious, you know. And the names of the pizzas are even non-pretentious and good.
Yeah, take us through like two or three of the best sellers or like the most
distinctive. One of the ones that was kind of a surprise hit for us because of the controversy of it. Thank you. I'll try English as a second language. But the controversy was the hillbilly Hawaiian. So you know, the pineapple thing on pizza gets a lot of people's dandruff.
Oh, yeah. But debate right there.
Yeah, but we said, okay, well, if we're gonna do it, we're gonna do the ultimate version of a Hawaiian style pizza you can possibly do, but it's going to have to have a Texas hillbilly twist to it. And so for us, we use our Dr. Pepper pulled pork, and that stuff goes into a vat of Dr. Pepper, legit Dr. Pepper. And
it goes
into the smoker for about 4 or 5 hours, and it comes pull off the bone when it's done. And then we actually take fresh pineapples. So if I took you into our walk-in cooler, you'd see just boxes of fresh pineapples in there. And we actually grill those on our charbroiler before they go on the pizza. So we try to push for as much as possible. So Hillbilly Hawaiian has been very popular. Our most popular smoked meat pizza is our Texan. That's going to have our smoked brisket on there. It's going to have smoked sausage, fried jalapenos, fried onions. It has our house made barbecue sauce base, and then a swirl of that on top. And I mean, it's probably just a mouthful of Texas barbecue. Yeah. Perfectly delivered. You know, it's funny, of all of our pizzas, not the prettiest look at, because it's kind of the color tones of it. It doesn't photograph as well, but it's easily our most ordered smoked meat pizza by far. And we've got the smokehouse, which is pulled pork, and it's got a lot of all the other smoked meats on there. And then our chicken pizzas, we have our smoking hen. So our smoking hen, we looked at it and said most chain restaurants out there have a chicken barbecue pizza. Mm-hmm. It's just like mechanically pressed together chicken in it's in the exact same shape, you know, because you can tell it's coming off like an extruder and they're cutting them off, and it's got fake grill mark lines that have been, you know, kind of embossed into it, you know, and everyone knows it's not legit, you know.
That's right. and then, you know, you're in for a treat if it came off an extruder.
And then because they have to have that perfect uniformity to it, you know, and then it has red onions, and it has some Casey Masterpiece or some store-bought sauce just thrown on top of it, and they call it a day, you know. And we're like, that is not the proper representation of good barbecue chicken on a pizza. And so we actually take whole chickens, we smoke those chickens, and then we hand pull all the meat. And so it's a mixture of light and dark meat in there, but then we save all the chicken skin that's been seasoned and smoked, and we chop all that up, and we actually put it on top of the pizza so it crisps up, and it gets it gets like little chunks of chicken skin bacon as it goes through our ovens, you know. So our process starts with a hand toss. The dough we use is an artisanal dough. It's similar to what a New York or a Napolitano style dough would be.
Right.
So we use special mixers. We use a special process to make that dough, and we don't overhandle it. And then we let it proof for 2 to 3 days. So it develops a lot of flavor. And that's what the problem with a lot of what competitors do out there is that they try and sell a talking point of fresh dough. We make our dough fresh daily, and that sounds like it's a good thing, but if you know anything about making really great bread, which is effectively what pizza crust is, you know, really great bread, that stuff's got to proof for a while. It's got to develop that yeast and that flavor, and all that stuff has to develop within that. And so by going 2 or 3 days in the proofing process, what we get is a much tastier
interesting. And more, I didn't know that. Yeah.
Result. Yeah. So all New York style doughs, if it's authentic, is going to have a 2 to 3 day proof. Napolitano is the same way, which is the original pizza coming out of Napoli. And so we follow that same process because it's just a proven, it's a couple thousand year old strategy for making pizza dough. So we're not going to try and make it better than that. They nailed that. And so then what we've done is take that and then we hand toss it, and we butter and season it, and we put it down onto a big, gigantic open flame charbroiler. And so we charbroil both sides of the dough to like about a half bake, or partial, what they call par baking it. So we partially bake it. And then we top it with all of our fresh sauces and all the barbecue meats and other things. And then we finish it in an Italian stone conveyor oven at about 700 to 800 degrees. So the net result you get is so good. I mean, it's just amazing. But the thing for us was just every stage of the way is like building flavor. You know, so we literally started from the ground up and said, okay, what's the best way to make dough that really has a ton of flavor? Okay, if you're going to grill it, we tested all different mechanisms for grilling it over that year and a half. And we found that if you fully grilled it, it got too dense and too chewy. So we found it was a hybrid between what we call flash grilling. So we flash grill it, finish it, and then put it in this oven. And we're one of only a handful of places in the country that even have these ovens. They're imported from Italy. And these things are literally like, together, they're like a Ferrari, buying a Ferrari. They're very expensive, but they make about 300 pizzas an hour, and they have a stone conveyor belt. So if you're in there looking at it, it's the same kind of stone that goes in the bottom of an Italian dome oven. And the insides of the oven are actually lined with stones. as well. So that oven really retains temperature really well, and it fully cooks that pizza in about just under a minute and a half to 2 minutes max. So it's a neat process.
Can we talk a little bit about how I feel so violated right now by pizza growing up, Pizza Hut, and
that was not primo stuff.
Man, when you're talking about proofing the dough, and you say proofing the dough, and I know that that means that you let it kind of get the air in it for days. It's sitting there and aging.
Yeah. Yeah.
We were sold a bill of goods on this whole, like, fresh dough. This is fresh dough. And
I don't know, man. It was the 80s.
Made this morning.
The standards were different. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and your cereal box said it had 8 essential vitamins.
That's right.
It did say that. Oh, my gosh.
9 pounds of sugar, but.
I think that's what I appreciate about Howdy's is that you're going backwards and you're getting more real, more authentic, and you're backing up your brand statements with actual operations, actual proof and product.
Yeah, you know, it's for us, you asked the question earlier, what is Texas to us? I think you just nailed it, actually. It's there's a deep authenticity to the people here. There's a deep authenticity to the way of life here. It's community, it's family, but it's a lot of, we're still very connected to a lot of traditional things, especially here in College Station, because the Aggie roots here that we have, and the ranching and farming and other things like that, is that there's just a deep appreciation of uncomplicated, simple things that just work.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think that's the nature in many ways, is that the attitude is not overcomplicated or too uppity. The approach to life here is not that. And people who are that way don't fit well, might be the right way to put it. You know, it's just that they're going to be uncomfortable because everyone else around them is much more unfocused on those things as being a priority. Right. It's more important, the relationships is more important, the quality of what you have in those relationships. And I think it is some of the other things that are kind of trappings that don't really add value. And so that's what we try to do, is strip back the process to what can we do to honestly reflect the nature of Texas as it is today. And that's in the food traditions. And so that's why we started with Central Texas Barbecue, because I think that's probably the most recognized as being a truly distinct Texas thing. Yeah. And then we're also starting to weave in some of the Southwestern food profiles, the Tex-Mex, the Mexican flavor profiles and things like that, which also obviously very honestly represent who we are as a state. But we're also much more multinational and national than that, even when you get into places like Houston and Austin. Yes. That you have huge immigrant populations. Yeah. Some of the biggest Jamaican populations and South African populations in the world are actually in Houston, you know. Right. When you get to Austin, the culinary scene there is so diverse and so many great things happening there that, you know, we take a lot of inspiration from all that. But the biggest thing is just trying to do a good job of honestly representing the people in the product, you know, and then make sure that one of the concepts we try to own is this phrase, eat better pizza. So hashtag eat better pizza. We hit this all the time. That's kind of our inception level programming, if we're being honest, you know, we're drilling it all the time into people's heads, is that, you know, listen, if you're going to do anything, at least eat better pizza, eat something worth your money and worth your time and your energy. Well, you know,
that goes back to, you know, one of the questions we like to ask is, what are some factors that tend to inhibit your voice? It doesn't sound like you have a problem with your voice. It's that when you just use the word pizza, everybody fills that bucket in their mind with just a range of things, a lot of which is a really subpar mental conception about what pizza is. So it seems like most of your brand voice is simply telling the story of, it's about ingredients, it's about Texas, it's about community.
Yep.
It's like you're starting from scratch in a lot of ways.
And you deserve better. I mean, people, you deserve better.
Yeah, they do. They do. You know, we feel like, and so many people, I mean, I had a guy who's a banker here locally for one of the banks right near where our location is. And he came up and he goes, I've been in here several times. And he goes, I don't know why, but your pizza is just so much better. And I said, well, you know, and we talked a little bit about the story and what we're doing. And he goes, well, that explains it. He goes, I sat down and he goes, I've eaten a pizza all my life. I'm in my 50s now. Why am I just tasting this now? Right. So we do feel like there's a bit of a re-education component But that's where the inception level simplicity has to kind of come in, which is, again, the average adult seeing something like 7,600 advertisements a week, mm-hmm. you know? And so that's just so much noise. So that's why you'll see, like, when we talk about ourselves, it's Howdy's Texas Grilled Pizza. We don't just say Howdy's Pizza on a regular basis when we talk about ourselves, because we really want to own this idea, Texas Grilled Pizza, in yeah. people's mind over and over and over.
Right.
And we know we're in the early days. If we're only 6 months into this journey, you know, we're going to be saying that for a long time, yeah. you know, and just drilling that in. I'm sure there'll be a day when it's just Howdy's and everyone knows exactly what it is you're talking about. But for right now, we know we've got to drive that message home. And again, 50% of the people who are coming to the door have never tried us every day. You know, so that's, we know we're doing a good job getting out there, but there is so much more work to be done in that way. So,
well, and your location is great too, right? So just the number of rooftops that are around your location, you're perfectly positioned to really be that go-to local place that all of those families are reaching multiple times in a month.
Yeah, no, it's been really interesting as we've watched the numbers evolve, because you kind of have your projections when you go in about how your business is going to break down. And so because we're a full service pizzeria, so we're dine-in, takeout and delivery. Mm-hmm. We thought delivery would be a much larger part of our equation. Because when you look at the other pizza joints that are around us, they're mainly, 65% or more of their business is generally delivery. Mm-hmm. And for us, it's less than 8%. And so we were really surprised.
That's like, interesting. You know, yeah.
And we thought, well, we didn't launch delivery right away. We were a month and a half in before we opened up delivery. So we thought maybe but it's been like 5 months since that point. We've been talking about delivery all the time. And we're just finding out that people view it as a family destination. That's what's happening. Good. We have a huge amount of dine-in traffic, and then we have a lot of takeout. And so people are comfortable because we're, as you said, a lot of rooftops. We're in the bedroom community here where all the growth is happening down here in South College Station. And so we are seeing, you know, a lot of people. We're just convenient for them to swing by on the way home, and they like coming in. And when they come in, they grab a shake or they grab something else while they're there. So we're learning what it means, because the customers tell you, they vote with their wallets and with their feet, you know? And so we're seeing based on their behavior, what they're telling us, which is, hey, it's great, you know, that you have delivery, but that's really not the thing they're asking for from us right now.
Right. Have you ever heard the expression, big hat, no cattle?
Yeah.
All hat, no cattle.
Yeah. All hat, yeah. No cattle. This is kind of like a Texas way of being like, quit your bullshitting. Like,
yeah,
we're really more interested in what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And man, I think that's what you've got going on. You started with, no, this is what we're going to do. You people, product and process, you like yeah. laid it out, and then you started talking about yourself. Like, yeah. I think that's so cool. You got it right first before yeah. you moved on.
Well, that was the advantage of having that year and a half working out of that test kitchen and again, trying to figure out what is Texas Grilled Pizza, because when we come out, it can't be a muddied message. It's got to be crystal clear, you know, because we feel a lot of responsibility if we're going to put Texas on something and call it something, you know, hey, this is it, then yeah. you sure as heck better treat that with some kid gloves and really have put some due diligence into that before you have that kind of hubris, because just like we're unpretentious, we also don't take pretension very well in this state from other people. So it's easy for a Texan to knock you down a few pegs with a bless your heart real quick.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the thing we don't want to hear. We don't want people like, oh, Texas Grilled Pizza, bless your heart.
you tried. That was nice.
We've got a high expectation of a low demeanor.
Yeah, so we have that same expectation of ourselves. It's like we got one chance to come out and do this really, really well, because then people won't question it. People are like, yeah, and that's good enough to be called that, and they'll accept it. But it really had to be a high mark. So during that test kitchen process, we were able to have, you know, almost 3,000 plus people try our pizza in different catering events and things that we did. And we were just the whole time, we were almost giving the pizzas away in those situations just to get feedback. We wanted to hear people tell us, oh, we love that. Oh, that was too much. In the beginning, oh, it's awesome, but it's got too much meat on it. There's too much barbecue meat. Okay, well, we got to dial that back. Oh, well, you know, that would be better if the sauce wasn't quite as sweet, you know? And so we were listening for all those data points and trying to look for the trends and the data that kind of gave us a sense of how to adjust things. Some of the feedback we got is, like we're really big spice guys. So we're like hammering the spice into those things in the beginning. And then we had a lot of other people, like, especially ladies coming back and going, that was a little intense. So we got to find how do we kind of bring these things into balance.
Right.
And so those things helped us to dial in the product before we got to open. So by the time we got to open, we already knew that the people came through the door that we've got a 9 in 10 chance that they're going to love this before they've even sat down, given the nature of the market and everything else that was there. So yeah, you're right. We didn't want to come in and be all hat and no cattle. We knew we were going to come in and make kind of a big presentation of a fully unified brand, but we didn't want to come out and then fall flat on our face
in right.
the product that didn't even come close to the promise.
Right. And
so those were really big factors in all of our minds as we were heading.
That's really smart. Well, yeah. let me ask our two kind of closing questions.
Yeah.
One, what's the next thing? What are you excited about and you need people to know?
Mm.
And then two, we've also been collecting weird and strange stories, often in the restaurant business and in other businesses. Our world's kind of full of wackadoodle people. We want to hear if you've had any crazy fun experiences.
Or a test kitchen moment that went really bad. Who knows?
Ooh, yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. So what are we excited about right now? Well, we're excited mainly right now to really deliver our promise consistently. I mean, that's the thing we're focused on right now is our plan for the growth of Howdy's is to grow this to 1,000 locations. That would make us one of the top 10 pizzerias in the country. So that's a big goal. We want to get into the top 10. We're not drunk on the illusion that we're going to hit the top 3 to 5, because now you're talking 10,000 plus locations. And we see extendability for the Texas concept, but that's kind of a mainstream, anybody's pizza, Domino's, Little Caesars, Papa John's. Those are really, really entrenched guys. But getting into the top 10, we think it's doable, mm-hmm. probably within the next 20 to 25 years, But the first goal for us is in the next 5 to 7 years to get to 100 to 150 locations in Texas. So that's what we're excited. That's awesome. What we're building. But it all starts with really perfecting and keeping our promises here in College Station and doing a really good job here first. So we're looking at the rest of this year is just really about dialing it in, locking down process, making sure that we can give people a consistently great experience and preparing for growth. We've really built this whole business with the idea of scaling in mind from the ground up, just like we did with the product. We apply that to all of our business processes and technology and systems so that literally we can go up another location and click a few buttons and clone all of our processes and systems right over into the next location. So we put a lot of work into that. And so we'll move into franchising here probably sometime late 2020, early 2021. But then in between now and then, the next thing is a food truck. So we're gonna get a food truck here for Aggieland. That probably won't be part of our franchise process, but this is a town that's just got a lot of opportunity. Yeah, a lot of opportunity there. And I think they've really started to hit a mark here. You've got some really great operators here like Chef Tay, and you've got Blake with Blake Steaks. He's doing a great job. And so we're impressed by what they're doing. We want to join the party on some of that and bring Howdy's Texas Grilled love to the tailgates and everything else that happens in this wonderful town. And so that'll be the next step. But yeah, just for us, the best thing in the world, keeping promises and delivering the same thing day in and day out. You got to fall in love with it. We look at business as we don't expect it to be easy. That's part of, I think, one of the great sins of entrepreneurs is that they lament that it wasn't easy or the price mm-hmm. that they had to pay to get there. Mm-hmm. And we've kind of fallen in love with the fight. We expect it to be a block by block street fight. And so we wake up every day ready to swing in a positive way. We're not attacking anybody. We're trying to win the game here. And when the obstacles show up, you don't fall into a depression and think, oh gosh, this is hard.
Right.
No, we walked in going, this is going to be hard. It's like just bracing for it. Then when it hits, and if it's not as bad as you thought it was going to be, well, that's a blessing. And if you win an easy one, well, that's gravy on top. But you don't fall into the illusion that somehow this was ever going to be easy and that a $47 billion industry was going to give up a piece just because it's not a good idea.
Right.
speaking of loving the fight, you guys, the students are back. How did you guys weather the summer? Did you guys notice anything, the usual dip?
Yeah, it's a great question. Well, I mean, we opened March 8th, had a booming April, and then everybody left, you know, so.
Yes, we noticed.
Strategery there, yeah. So we went into, we got hit in June, like I think everybody did. I know nationwide, the whole industry was reporting really rough June and July.
Okay.
Different impacts for why that happened. One of them was a lot of the trade scare stuff with China that started. It just kind of took a beating to the consumer confidence, and you saw just across the board spending kind of took a dip.
Right.
But for us in this town, obviously, you know, half the city walks away, you know, for 3-4 months, you know, so there are a couple months. And so anyways, yeah, so we did see a dip, but frankly, it wasn't as bad as we thought it was going to be.
Okay.
And that's because of where we're located. You know, we're not central campus. We're not right across from all the dorms or anything. We're down in South College Station, and we're in the bedroom communities, and they leave and go on vacation for a week or two, but they don't leave for the whole summer.
That's right.
And so they do come back, and so we saw it bounce back in July, actually, pretty significantly from June. June was the low point, but that was kind of, again, industry-wide, and then pretty common for College Station.
So
for us, what we did is we just got super aggressive on communicating great value and hit our social media channels really hard and drove relationships and special events and things like that. And so it worked out well for us. But cool. As far as weird stories, well,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's, gosh, there's been so many bizarre things, but, you know, I think the biggest thing for us has been, you know, I don't know if it's a weird story, but what it is something we're really inspired by. I don't know if that's useful
that's
to you.
That's great, yeah.
You know, we hear so much garbage in the industry about how hard it is to find good people.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
I mean, it's almost this point, you know, verbatim, they repeat each other.
Yeah.
And we're just not finding that to be the situation. What we're finding is that when we go out and we search for people, we're getting a flood of people that frankly impress us. You know, young people, you know, obviously we tend to get high school and college age people, but man, when you hear some of these people's stories and what they have gone through in life to get where they are and, you know, want to be ambassadors for the UN and child psychologists. And I mean, you hear the stories of what these young people want to do with their lives. What we've committed to at Howdy's is our goal is to, no matter who we work with, they're better for the experience. I wish we were always perfect at achieving that. But it is our goal. It's our heart. And I'm inspired by many of these young people that come through.
Oh, that's cool.
Stories we hear from them of their own lives inspire us, you know? And so we've done a lot of things that we've done on purpose, A, to empower them, and then B, to make it better for our guests. And so, you know, for example, any one of our frontline people, they can solve any problem that a guest has up to $25 without asking for permission. You know, so, you know, if it can be solved for $25 or less, just delight the guests, take care of them.
Yeah.
That's their heart. I mean, I can't tell you how many times we're in training and they go, it drives them crazy to be on the front line facing a customer who's got a problem that obviously was the mistake of the business and they have no ability to resolve it. They have no ability to solve it. And generally the managers aren't helping either in those contexts. And so by being able to say, oh, you know what, we're just going to remake that pizza and we messed up your medium pizza, we're going to make it a large pizza just to make it better for you.
Yeah.
And so that's why we invented a policy internally called make it better than right. You know, is that
that's great.
Just making it right might solve the problem, but it doesn't delight anybody.
Right.
I like that.
And so that's for really us, good. We make it better than right. And so when, and we were brand new when we first opened up, we just got slammed. I mean, like crazy slammed for that first little period there. And our poor little team was just doing its best to keep up. And so there were some people where we didn't deliver joy and wow. We were a little off the mark with some of those in the very first weeks. And so we got to give a lot of pizzas and other things away to make things right. But it's built a lot of fandom and goodwill and a lot of loyalty among our people, both internally and externally, who know A, they can solve problems, and then B, you know, knowing that the people that they interact with are going to be committed to making it right.
That's awesome.
Right. That has been a huge advantage for our team. And so there's lots of growth. There's lots more opportunities and lessons to learn. But you know, working with the public, you're always going to deal with, you know, the reality is that some people, you know, we say this to our guests, you don't know what they experienced before they walked in here. Mm-hmm. You know, and so if there's a lot of emotion or things get agitated over what seems like a small thing, just understand it's probably not about the thing. It's not about the pepperoni or not pepperoni. It's not about right. any of those things. And it's our opportunity to just be some salt and light in an otherwise dark day for that person.
Right.
And I said, you have to understand that the first person, you know, who orders a pizza from you and the 500th person, for number 500 that day, it's actually their first pizza they've ordered of the day.
That's right.
And so it's just consistency of making sure that we show them that love that we feel towards them. We happen to do it through pizza. We happen to do it through a great experience. But understand that you're going to deal with human dynamics because you're dealing with the public. And there's going to be some unreasonable requests. And at the end of the day, you don't win anything by trying to win anything. Yeah. You know, you win by just taking care of people. And it will work Absolutely. Out in the end. It'll work out.
You picked a nice medium to transfer love in the form of pizza. I mean, yeah. I don't know of many other things that communicate so well.
Yeah.
I'm out of questions. I thought this was fantastic. And we're at like an hour. So
oh my gosh.
We've been
That's
cooking.
Awesome. Man, yeah. I think, thank you for sharing your heart and your mind and everything with us. This is awesome.
Yeah, well, hey, I'm a huge fan of everything you guys are doing and the opportunity to educate people. I mean, hey, if we've got more brands and more people committed to doing things with the right intentions, the right yeah. motivations, you know, it's interesting. I'm a big fan of Buckminster Fuller, if you've ever tracked mm-hmm. him. He is one of my kind of distance mentors. Obviously, he's passed away, but America's gentle genius, you know, he
built that building that was super yeah. strange. It was like, it yeah. wasn't, is it a geodesic dome or something like
yeah.
that?
Yeah, Dymaxion House.
Dymaxion House, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So he, in fact, designed the Epcot Center at Walt Disney World, you know, yeah. and so a lot of the world, the future of tomorrow, land of tomorrow, whatever it is there, it is all based off Buckminster Fuller's designs and concepts. But Bucky, he talked about this trend, and he said, you know, from the 1970s, or I'm sorry, from the 1900s until the 1970s, there was a really radical shift that happened in the world. And this is relevant to what you just said, Tim, so yeah, I'm not yeah, yeah. too far off track. But the what he discovered in his research was that in 1973, the year I was born, that the average standard of living in 1973 was mm-hmm. higher than the highest standard of living available in 1900. Mm. So just in 73 years, somehow the entire world standard of living had raised.
Yeah.
And by standard of living, he had long life expectancy, access to healthcare, access to food, access to education. Mm-hmm. So just a whole number of criteria they measured it on. And they said, why?
I mean, like, it's one generation.
You know, how did that happen? You know, yeah. that would happen. And what he found was that between 1900 and 1973 was the largest technological military buildup in the world in history, the advances in military technology. And so what happened, though, was at 90 degrees, so what's called the law of precession, you drop a rock in a pond, the ripple effects go out at 90 degrees. So the rock being dropped was military buildup around the world. Everyone's building military technology, but the repercussions at 90 degrees were that technology increased, farming became more effective, pharmaceuticals and science and medicine became more effective, you know, wanting to produce crops more effectively so that we could feed troops, you know, but all yeah. that had a net benefit out to all of society. And so it's kind of the bumblebee effect. The bumblebee every day doesn't get up and go, time to go feed the world. It just happens right. to have a fuzzy little body. And in the process of doing what its self-interest is, which is going out and collecting nectar for the hive, it just happens to pick up and cross-pollinate and all the rest of us eat, mm-hmm. you know, so by doing what it was designed to do. So he said, if they're honeybees, then humans are money bees. And he said, you know, so if the money bees go out and do what they're doing, they're raising the standard, rising tide raises all ships.
That's right.
He said, so imagine if the goal of going out and building up military technology had such an amazing effect on things, what if we actually went out and decided to build things to do good?
Yeah.
What could then the results at 90 degrees be? You know, and yeah. so that processional effect, procession, walking in a straight line, precession, you know, the horizontal impact at 90 degrees. And so I always try to think of that as we've designed Howdy's, is we're very missional in nature. And if there are more people out there building these really great companies that have an intention of creating great exchange, great value, delivering better quality across the board, that sort of triple net bottom line idea. You know, it's not just good for the shareholders, it's what's good for society and everything else. Then imagine what's possible, you know. And so that I think that's true. I think that's real. And it starts with a simple little pizzeria in College Station, Texas. It starts with an amazing creative agency, you know, that's committed to doing good work and really amazing things. And so every single one of us have an opportunity to create that processional effect, that 90 degrees to motion, by really understanding what it is we're targeting. Mm-hmm. You know, so for us, loving people through really dang good pizza, but for you guys, you know, great messaging and a powerful connection that drive, you know, good business, you know, those are great things.
I'm really glad that you landed in Central Texas and it wasn't Florida.
You know, yeah, me too.
Benefit to us.
Yeah, no alligators. You can keep the pythons. So.
Stay away from Florida, man. That's right.
Well, so. I'm going to close this out. Michael, thank you for being here, man. Your heartbeat, I felt like it synced with our heartbeat, and I just love when that happens. So I just want to say thanks for your time.
Yeah, it's a joy.
Cool, man. All right. Well, we'll talk to you soon. Take care. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Brand Manual Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. We'd be super grateful if you shared. You can find the other episodes on Apple Podcast and Spotify. We'll see you next time on the Brand Manual Podcast.